Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Let's get to it. 5 days left in the regular season, and we start with this. Angels shortstop Andrelton Simmons is opting out of the last games of the Angels season. Obviously, at this stage, a lot of players being concerned about COVID-19 and knowing that the Angels are not in contention, it makes sense for Simmons to step away. We'll be talking with Carl Ravitch about that and whether or not it's going to have any impact on Simmons's free agency, which is coming up. Hamstring discomfort delayed Justin Turner's return to the Dodgers. He was in the lineup initially to start at third base, but it was a late scratch because of recurring discomfort. The bottom line is he's not going to be healthy for the start of the postseason next week. The Cardinals and the Royals. How about the Cardinals? Everything they've gone through this year, 16 days of shutdown because of COVID outbreak. Brad Miller got a big hit for them yesterday.
On 1-2, Zimmer to Miller. A swing, and the ball is hit hard right field, deep and off the wall. Goldschmidt scores. Miller makes it into second with an RBI double. 4-0 Cardinals, and Miller just broke out of an 0-for-20.
John Rooney on the Cardinals Radio Network. The final score there, 5-0. The Brewers and the Reds. It was 2-2, top of seventh inning, and this happened.
2-0 the count. Antone, the stretch, the pitch. Line drive, left field, down, base hit. It gets by Aquino. It's going to go all the way to the wall. Jerko is in. The Brewers have a 3-2 lead in the top of the seventh. Eric Sogard comes through in the clutch. And now the Brewers looking to add more.
That from 620 WTMJ. They would not add more, but they would win 3-2. Meanwhile, the Phillies are swept in a doubleheader with the Nationals. So as of this morning, what a crowded National League field. The Padres are the number four seed. They're going to be the number four seed in the postseason because of this.
Playing some good baseball at the right time. Another 1-2 pitch. And that's it. The Dodgers are division champs for the eighth consecutive year. Even in a year where not much in the world seems normal. A dose of the familiar. Division champs again, the best in the West, unchanged.
Joe Davis with that call on the Dodgers television network. Behind the Padres in the National League standings, the Cardinals are 2 games over .500. The Marlins 1 game over .500. 3 teams as of today are right at .500. The Reds, Giants, and Brewers. And as of today, the Phillies would be out of the postseason. They have a 7.21 bullpen ERA. The Pirates edge the Cubs. Jacob Stallings getting a big hit.
And the pitch. And a swing and a deep fly ball out to left toward the wall. And this one is gone right down the line. Jacob Stallings with a walk-off homer. And the Pirates sink the Cubs 3-2.
That from 93.7 The Fan. And Taylor, I'm going to acknowledge something to you. Look, it hasn't been a good year for the Pirates, right? We're not doing a lot of highlights on the Pirates.
Right.
I did Jacob Stallings because I know him, gotten to know him. His dad was the head basketball coach at Vanderbilt for a lot of years.
Ooh.
Stallings, one of the great guys in the game. And so I just want to give him a little love.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. You know, you tease me about the O's whenever I bring them up in the Bleacher tweets, but you are always looking for the Vanderbilt connection. So your hands are not clean here, mister.
No, you're 100% right. Twins and Tigers, and Byron Buxton got the Twins going.
A high fly deep down the line, fair or foul? Fair. 1-0 Twins.
Dick Bremer with the call on the Twins television network. And a cool thing in that moment when Byron Buxton came back to the dugout, Nelson Cruz put his robe around him in the dugout to honor him for being the king of the Twins in that moment. It was 4-4, bottom of the 10th inning, and here's what happened.
Garcia from the stretch. And the 0-1 is swinging a liner left field shallow. That ball sinking and down for a base hit. And he's around third. He scores. And the Twins walk it off 5-4-10.
That was Corey Provis, Treasure Island Baseball Network. But the game of the day, no doubt about it, Indians and White Sox. In the bottom of the 10th inning, after the White Sox took a 3-2 lead, the Indians put a couple runners on base. Jose Ramirez at the plate.
A swing and a drive to deep right center field, away, back and gone.
It's a game winner. It's a playoff clincher. And for the fourth time in the last 5 years, Indians fans, you will have a postseason to remember.
Tom Hamilton, the big voice, WTAM 1100. Yeah, as of today, the Indians would face the White Sox in the first round. We're going to be talking about Jose Ramirez and his MVP chances, the Indians and their playoff chances with Carl Ravitch coming up. We're also going to be talking with Todd Radom. Before that, I just want to mention, check out the latest episode of Fantasy Football Focus. Last night, the crew recorded a live version of the podcast over Zoom, all shot remotely from their living rooms in front of a sold-out virtual audience. Matthew, Fields, Stefania, and Daniel answer questions about expectations for Calvin Ridley, why Stefania is a cone, where Not Cool Keith's nickname came from, and Field expressed his passion for breakfast. You can listen to Fantasy Focus Football wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch, play-by-play man for ESPN, of course, the host of Baseball Tonight. Where's the Rabbit Train today?
Rabbit Train local. We're doing the local run today. Had Yankees Blue Jays last night, and for seven innings, it was really good. And then the eighth and ninth inning were a train wreck. We had Lyon come in, and he wasn't on the lineup card, so that took some time. Then we had a Blue Jay reliever come in, and he wasn't on the same page with the catcher, so that took a while. And meanwhile, all these other games are ending in walk-offs, and they're tied 2-2 late. So it was a benefit to be able to sit there and watch and have updates during the game late. But it felt like one of those nights where you're like, "Wow, we're all kind of focused right now. We're watching what we shouldn't be. There's so many other great games going on." So the Rabbit Train staying local and really looking forward to Chicago Cubs White Sox game Friday, and then our round. The three-game series are going to be incredible, and we get seven of the eight of them. So we're local. We're getting charged up for what should be an unbelievable week.
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned that. I was watching that last night, and the reliever you're talking about, Chase Anderson, Alejandro Kirk, I've never seen a situation as bad as what we saw last night where the pitcher and catcher could not get on the same page. And look, Chase Anderson has not had a good season. Alejandro Kirk is a 21-year-old catcher, so I couldn't really figure out exactly what the problem was. But I'm guessing, how many times did he step off the mound as he was looking in for the sign, Carl?
I'll tell you this. He stepped off half as many times as I think it was Baruki who came in after him. And they literally had, what appeared to be seven meetings on the mound. So it unfortunately went from bad to worse. The silver lining for Anderson was last week he gave up five home runs in an inning. Last night he struck out five Yankees in a row. So he kind of had it going And then you realize there was just nothing left in the tank, and it fell apart for him. But yeah, that part was rather infuriating. And I'm sure in a 12-1 game, nobody enjoyed the way that was playing out. I know I didn't.
Yeah, I know. When you're doing the broadcast and it slows down like that, it definitely, because then you find yourself trying to get to topics and fill in the gap. All right.
It got so bad, Buster. It got so bad, though. I said, Tim, what's on your radar for today, last night? He said, well, I'm going to go to the dentist to get my teeth cleaned because we got a big week coming up. And that was hard for me to understand, that you need to go to the dentist as if you were kind of going to the store to get some toiletries. He was going to the dentist to get his teeth cleaned because he was going to travel up to Bristol, which is just so typical Tim. It was beautiful. So yeah, we went there in the ninth inning.
Most of us, you know, worried about, other things in that situation.
Right, exactly.
That was strange. I'm going to have to ask Tim about that next week. Andrelton Simmons opts out of the end of the regular season with the Angels. They're 3.5 games out of the eighth spot. This got some play yesterday. People were trying to give explanations. I think the explanation's obvious, Carl. You're talking about a veteran player who's made a lot of money. He's got people in his family, I think, as we all do, who might be at increased risk. And because the Angels aren't in contention, he's like, you know what? I'm going to take it to the house.
I'm not really moved by it. I probably would wonder, you know, once you see the team completely out of the race, there is a bit of a bail feel to it. Like, let's just finish this off. We've managed to do what we've done with regards to the COVID and making sure no one gets sick. So I'm not really sure that, you know, with three games to go or whatever the minimal number left is, that it was the optics of it are great. But again, they're out of it. I understand the point about I've made enough money, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it hurts them down the road with regards to free agency. But you've been with us. We've all been together. And now you decide to leave. And again, you got to couch it with, unless there is a underlying compelling reason that no one knows about, then of course you have every right and should do that. But on the surface, let's just finish it out. Where are you going?
I would say this on social media, people are asking whether or not it would have an impact on his free agency and the perception of him as a player and perception of him as a teammate. Zero, in my opinion.
Zero. I would agree. I don't think it has anything. I wouldn't do that at all. And if I'm looking for a premier defender and one of the best shortstops in the game, Andrelton Simmons is on my list for sure. This doesn't change that.
There's not a lot at stake in the American League playoff field, unlike the National League, which is completely chaotic. But in the American League, it's pretty much set. But I do think that the most compelling thing for me is who's the number four seed and who's the number five seed.
Yeah.
Twins or Yankees, that seems like a big deal. Our old friend Steve Phillips tweeted out this morning, Twins are 22-5 at home. Yankees are only 11-16 on the road. That is why the Twins are desperate to finish ahead of the Yankees as the four seed, so they host the wild card series. I think there's something to that. What do you think?
100% there's something to it. And look, you know, the White Sox, this is a huge series for the Twins and the White Sox, because it's not out of the realm of possibility that the White Sox could slip to a 4 or 5 seed. So I think the Yankees benefit greatly if they can from playing at home. It was clear last night, Aaron Boone made it clear to us, this was Gerrit Cole's last regular season start, that in spite of the desire to play at Yankee Stadium, and that is their preferred destination for the opening round, that, you know, we're not going to change things. We're not going to risk injury. We're not going to use players or pitchers that we don't believe is necessary. Gerrit Cole pitching in any park is generally better than somebody else pitching. So taking it on the road is not ideal given the different numbers that the Twins have at home and the Yankees on the road. I think the White Sox are in the mix because they're scuffling a little bit lately. The thing I observe about Cole and the Yankees is and he's been great. And the Higashioka dynamic seems to really be good. I think at 4 starts, his ERA is somewhere around 0.99 or 1 or very close to 1. You're going to face an ace, and there's a really good chance, really good, that the game is, 1-0, 1-1, 0-0. And Cole last night gave up another home run. He's given up 14 home runs There to me would be a little anxiety, given that in a 0-0 game or a 1-0 game that they lead and there's one man on after a walk, that has to be in the back of your head. And, you know, we've seen Clayton Kershaw over the years pitch really well for 4, 5, sometimes 6 innings. And all of a sudden you give up that 2 or 3 run home run, and all of a sudden you're on the bad side of a 2 or 3-1 game. And that would be my concern, because we've seen the Yankee offense be great, and we've seen the Yankee offense absolutely go silent. And against the arms that they're likely to see in that first game against Cole, it's just something in the back of the mind. That's all. He was great again last night. He's been great the last 4. He knows what his role and responsibility is, but that discounts the other team and the other pitcher.
Yeah, and the other team and the other pitcher, it looks like it's going to be Jose Berríos, who we had on Sunday Night Baseball. He was terrific. Like, he's put together his stuff in the last 3 or 4 starts, and that Twins lineup hasn't been as dynamic this year, but they're capable of hitting home runs. They showed that last year.
I mean, Buxton led the game off last night with a homer. I mean, we remember Yandy Diaz last year in the wild card game, what happened to Oakland, and how the Rays used that to catapult themselves into the next round. Those are the types of things that happen, and that's why this is going to be the greatest, most memorable postseason we've ever had. And this week is going to be that way.
Yep. And when we get to, you know, if in fact we get Twins and Yankees, one thing I'm curious about is sort of the hangover of history that, you know, hangs off the Twins. Mm-hmm. You know, 13 straight losses in the playoffs to the Yankees. Most of the time when we get these historical notes, I kind of shrug it off like, yeah, well, that involved players and teams that, you know, we're not seeing right now. I feel like this is one of those stats that hangs on the players. What do you think?
Clearly, there's an awareness of it, and it's so glaring that you can't ignore it, and it will be talked about. It's why Game 1 is so huge. You know, the Twins win Game 1. It eliminates all of those conversations, and you're going into the next 2 games knowing you have to win one of them. If you were in a wild card, one game, winner-take-all, that would be the absolute topic of conversation. And the Yankees grab a 2-0 lead in the first, and the conversation certainly turns, and whether a player would ever acknowledge it, it has to, I think, creep into their heads like, good God, can you believe we have this record against the Yankees and we have to face them? There are 8 teams in this thing, and we got to deal with a team that has bludgeoned us. That has to play a role. But the beauty of the 3 game is if you can somehow win Game 1, you exercise those demons and you look forward to the next game or 2 if you have to go to Game 3, knowing we just beat them. We can beat them. Like, we ended the streak of losing, in a sense, in the postseason to the Yankees, at least on a day. And that's what I would hang my hat on, versus we have no chance. The Yankees have killed us.
So 14 teams are not going to make the playoffs. Among those, the Mets, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks, the Angels, the Red Sox. Among those 5 teams, Carl, who I think you would agree with me, coming into the 60-game season, you wondered if these teams would be in the playoff mix. Of those 5 teams, Mets, Nationals, Diamondbacks, Angels, Red Sox, which is the most disappointing team in your eyes?
The Red Sox gave up before the season started, so they don't surprise me. When the Nationals returned without Rendon and Strasburg said, see you later, that wasn't a surprise that they ended up where they did. You know, I think it's going to be, to me, the Angels or the Mets. I think the Angels made the move with Madden. They paid Rendon all that money. There was clearly this concern. They didn't have the pitching. It's proven once again that they need to have pitching and perhaps should have allocated some of those resources to arms. And I didn't look at the Syndergaard surgery as sort of a death knell for the Mets. I thought that when you had Stroman and you had Mats and you had DeGrom and you had Cespedes and you had the offense, even with Stroman checking out and Cespedes leaving, they've been really good offensively. They have great names in the bullpen. So there's a level of frustration, I guess, probably more so for me with the Mets. And I've always been high on the group there. They haven't delivered the way I thought they would, but they just seem to be better equipped to win relative to how they have performed. So I guess I would rank the Mets the biggest and then the Angels.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. You? Well, you've got DeGrom is, I think, is going to wind up winning the Cy Young Award. You've got guys who stepped up in that lineup like Dom Smith, and it is a really good lineup. You've got bullpen pieces, and they're not even close. Like, not close. We're not even really talking about them much as we go down the stretch as being a team that's contending. I got to tell you, I've been surprised by the Diamondbacks. Like, they, you know, how they've been run, the way they were put together, the signing of Bumgarner. Coming into the year, you thought, okay, that's an interesting team. They're 21-34. Now, Mike Hazen, you know, head of baseball ops for them, very adept, and he smartly, I think, pivoted quickly at the trade deadline, moved guys like Robbie Ray, Bradley as well, to get some return. But that they surprised me how much they struggled this year.
Yeah, I didn't put a lot of stock in them going in. I didn't think I just looked at the Bumgarner signing as rather than we're bringing in the big horse and the ace, that they were bringing in a guy who's closer to a 2-3 than a 1, as opposed to a team that went out and got like Zach Wheeler or obviously Gerrit Cole. It didn't move my needle. So I never was on the Diamondbacks bandwagon, knowing, again, I discounted them because of the Dodgers. Like it doesn't really matter because they're the best team in baseball and you're in their division. Look, then the other side, you're dealing with a Giants team that's way outkicked its coverage. They've been performing at a high level all season. And again, the high level this season in the National League is 500. You know, this isn't a team that's going to win 95 games over 162. They were going to win 83, 82. So the bar is a little different, but the competitive nature of the Giants probably surprises some people. And that's to the credit of Kapler and Farhan and the way that those guys have also stepped up.
You talked about the Nationals losing Strasburg, losing Rendon, and that's for that reason. They're having a player on their team having the best season nobody's talking about. Juan Soto, as of this morning, has an OPS of 1164. He's got 36 walks, 26 strikeouts, 24 extra base hits. Carl, he's 21 years old. Yeah, I hate making these historic comparisons, but this guy is Ted Williams of 2020. I mean, he's the perfect comp in terms of the power, the plate discipline, the understanding of what he was doing. And I tweeted out this morning that he's not going to win the MVP award this year, but he clearly is going to be the early favorite for 2021.
Well, the best part to me of Juan Soto was when you perform the way you did last year in the postseason. And again, he was so young. You do have to ask yourself, is that one of these postseason runs, magical runs? Is he going to be able to back it up? And he has come out and backed it up, you know, big time. So that's the beauty of, you know, the non one hit wonder. And you're right, he is going to be that guy. And I think I would use Bryce Harper as a comparison. As great as Harper was in his MVP season, he hasn't yet really repeated it on a consistent basis. We've seen flashes of it. Soto went out and was, in my opinion, the MVP of the World Series run. You know, as great as the pitchers were, I would have probably given it to him. And he is in the MVP conversation in a bizarre shortened season. And he will be again, I agree, for years to come. He has proven that what we witnessed was not a mirage. And that's a great thing for Washington baseball fans, a great thing.
I remember talking to Kevin Long, the Nationals hitting coach, back in January, and he said the only question is how long can he keep up that drive to get better? Because everybody you talk to talks about how devoted Juan Soto is to learning and getting better. And to see a young hitter that good at hitting a breaking ball, that's like Manny Ramirez at age 29, and this guy's 21 years old.
Yeah, and the energy he plays with, you know, that sort of passion, that stare back to the pitcher on a great take, you know, all that stuff, it goes from is that kind of an act, or are we going to see that for a long period of time? To Kevin's point, and we're seeing it again. It's now just 1 year removed from the postseason and the World Series, but it's the same. And I don't. Why would you change it? You know, you look at other sports, in particular golf, and there's this guy, Jordan Spieth, who I know you know and most of the people listening now know, but this guy was in contention for every major, and he goes and makes a swing change. Ricky Fowler makes a swing change. Tiger Woods went through a swing change. You hope, and we don't generally see it, that baseball players, while they are tinkering, they're not usually overhauling their swing. Cal Ripken and his batting stances come to mind. They looked like large-scale changes. They really weren't, especially when the bat went through the zone. If Soto stays true to who he is and just kind of tweaks what already is a great product, he'll be great. If he all of a sudden says to Long or someone else, it ain't working, or I don't feel like it's working when you're still putting up numbers like that, then you have a bigger issue. But yeah, so far he has stayed true to who he is and what he does, and it's been great.
Real quick before you go, to the major awards, really up in the air, National League Cy Young Award, American League MVP Award, who do you think is going to win those?
Good question. I guess I would, you know, and I think the next start, you know, it's a lot of times in these situations, Tim Kirchen pointed it out last night, when Chipper Jones won his MVP, it was because of what he did late in the year. My guess is, you know, whether it's Bauer or DeGrom, what they do in their last start may tip the scales. Currently, I would favor DeGrom. I think today he would win the award. God, the American League MVP award.
Did Jose Ramirez put himself over the top last night with that home run?
You think so? Yeah, that was fascinating. The walk to Cesar Hernandez was a disaster. The idea that Lindor hit one to the wall and walked to first base when he could have been on third, he kind of got taken off the hook for that. Ramirez is certainly in the conversation. You know, Luke Voit, DJ LeMahieu are in the conversation for the way that they and Voit's a whole different person, the way he looks. He just doesn't look. Last night, in Buffalo, they put sort of an old Luke Voit picture up on the big screen to announce his, you know, his numbers and say he's at the plate. He just, it looks like someone else. So if Luke Voit wins it, I'm not sure it's really Luke Voit. It's somebody else who's winning just using the name. But those would be my three candidates. And by the way, you know, you talked about the National League and guys like Soto. How about the year Marcell Ozuna is having? How about him replacing Josh Donaldson? I mean, that's been unbelievable, and he did it again last night on a team that may also have an MVP in Freddie Freeman. So that Braves, Alex does an unbelievable job.
Yeah, Marcell Ozuna, we've been talking about how for a lot of guys who are going to be in free agency, what happens in 2020 really doesn't matter. David Ross told his players that, look, no one's really going to care about the stats. Marcell Ozuna, having the year that he's having on a one-year contract, that will pay off this winter. That has worked out really well for him, for sure.
Exactly.
All right, Robbie, thanks for doing this.
All right, bud. Good to be on with you. See ya.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz, a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd's got some travel this weekend, so he moved him up for a Wednesday edition of this week's quiz and a Wednesday edition of Ballpark Presentation. And this week, Todd, Guaranteed Rate Field, otherwise known, I think generally, casual baseball fans would think of it as Comiskey, home of the White Sox.
Maybe U.S. Cellular Field, Buster? I don't know, but whatever it is, we know what we're talking about. Guaranteed Rate Field, 1991. So it's been open for a while. This ballpark was at the forefront of a generational wave of new stadia in MLB. But here's the big but, right? And you know this is coming. It was the last one opened before Camden Yards. So there was this inevitable comparison, which was not necessarily flattering. And let's face it, the originally opened Comiskey Park 2, let's call it, was pretty terrible. It was symmetrical. It was gigantic. It was cold. It was bleak. It was essentially built to be a revenue machine with very little consideration for aesthetics. Done on the cheap. But that's a whole other story. It had this enormous, enormous upper deck. But now we shift the narrative here, guys, because some 10 years after the ballpark opened, the ball club, the White Sox, got this right. They shaved 6,000 seats from the top of the upper deck. Can you imagine? Just knocked off, you know, eight rows, something like that. 6,000 plus seats. So these extensive renovations, they took place over a period of years. I think they righted the ship. I think of that ballpark in its original form. It was very white and royal blue, kind of like the old Yankee Stadium, right? And they, Buster, you wouldn't understand this, but Taylor and I would. The color palette shifted to grays, dark greens, black. I think they got it right. They kept the signature scoreboard. They improved upon it. Lots of my work there, guys. Lots of my historic work for the White Sox and the gift shop and some environmental graphics. And so before I go any further with it, I think it's a pretty good ballpark. And it was not a good ballpark. And by having done what they did to get this right over the course of years, they've, you know, we're not talking about it being replaced.
No, I always like going there. Yeah, I mean, again, I always look at it from a utility point of view. Although it's interesting. You remember that movie, My Best Friend's Wedding?
Well, vaguely, yeah.
Okay, so it was a Julia Roberts movie. And according to the script, Julia Roberts, you know, her best friend was a sports writer. And she goes to the ballpark in Chicago, and they shot one of the scenes, I believe, where they were sort of conveying that this was the press box where the reporters sat out in the right field line. And I remember watching that movie thinking, boy, you know, that's not where they sit. They sit behind a home plate. They have the press box behind home plate. Well, fast forward 20 years, and the White Sox took out the press box behind home plate, and they moved the sports writers out to right field.
Well, yeah, like, you know, prescient, basically. Buster, you're going to look at things like that in a movie. I'm going to look at things like Straight Outta Compton with that White Sox hat that didn't exist when that particular scene took place. But nonetheless, we digress. I also think about being out there for the 2005 World Series, the first World Series in Chicago since 1959. What an electric atmosphere it was. I remember going with a dear friend of mine who is a White Sox lifer and experience it through his eyes, just a very special moment. And I remember old Comiskey Park, which in its waning days was, you know, crumbling into dust in what's now the parking lot out there. I'm happy I got to it. It was a day game against the Seattle Mariners, sat like very, very close to the field, you know, this classic jewel box ballpark. Not very good White Sox teams out there, but this is a franchise ascendant right now. Sure looks like it, and a pretty good ballpark.
Yep, I agree with you. I think the renovations absolutely helped it. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
So we're in week 29, and I tallied things up. So after 28 weeks, Taylor sits at 12 correct answers, Buster with 8. We've had Dwayne Kuiper, we've had Matt Basgirgin, we've had Troy sitting in for Taylor, but the gap is where it is, you know?
Yeah,
so
that's
time
a shame.
To pick it up is all the thing, okay?
Okay.
Week 29, here we go. This franchise has lost more games than any other, more than 11,000 total defeats. Is it the Braves, the Phillies, the Reds, or the Dodgers? 11,000 total defeats. Braves, Phillies, Reds, Dodgers.
Now, let me ask you this. So you say the franchise. So are you saying the team name? In other words, is it the Dodgers, quote unquote, or is it the Dodgers franchise?
Franchise. Dodgers franchise, Phillies franchise, Reds franchise, Braves.
Okay. What do you got, Taylor?
I'm going to go Phillies.
I'm going to go Reds.
Taylor.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that pretty much ends
it's
it anyway.
Over, Buster.
I know.
Is there virtual champagne being popped? No high fives, no displays of, I mean, come on.
No, that's okay, but I know this. The Fandemics would be out in the parking lot cheering you on.
Nice.
For getting your correct Phillies answer. Even though it's a stat that doesn't reflect well on their franchise, they've got to have something to cheer about. Todd, before you go, your book is coming out in paperback. Tell us about that.
It is Winning Ugly. Came out in hardcover a few years ago. The paperback is out September 29th, which is next week. And it is my loving homage to some of the most questionable uniforms in the history of Major League Baseball. But it's also kind of goes into the history of the baseball uniform and why the 2020 Cincinnati Reds look somewhat like the 1869 Cincinnati Red Stockings. So it is available really wherever books are sold.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, right, Todd.
Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, Andrew DeSalvo writes in, if there were fans in the stands, who would be booed more loudly? The Astros in opposing stadiums or Bryce Harper in Philadelphia after another underwhelming in the context of his contract season?
Yeah, Andrew, you know the answer to that. The Astros would have been booed. It would have become sport this year to boo the Astros. Let's face it.
Yeah, every single stadium they went to, for sure. James D is up next at Mojo. We got to move quick.
Mojo here. Rising. Don't you know the Doors?
Oh, I do know the Doors, but that's over my head.
Mojo Rising 683. Okay.
Okay. Do you think baseball writers would have been better off giving out 3 Cy Youngs and MVPs this season, given the unusual schedule, instead of an AL and NL award? It'd be East, Central, and West, since that's who you competed against all season. I actually really like this idea from James.
Yeah, well, you're wrong. So is James. Here's the deal. Whatever. Every year, these teams don't play comparable schedules, right? We have players in the American League Central. Every year, they play a very different schedule than the teams in the American League East. Right. No. Veto, come down with a hammer.
All right. Last one for today. Peter R. writes in, Buster, I think Jesse Rogers mentioned it last week, but do you think the changes of player in-game video review policy this season is affecting some hitters more than they'd like to say? I'm thinking folks like JD Martinez, and Peter tagged him in this tweet, which I think is a little bit rude. But he finishes this up with, any way to show this with stats?
No, you really can't show it with stats because we don't know exactly how much the players are affected. But I don't think it's rude. We've been talking about it on air. When we had the Red Sox on air, we were talking about, yeah, JD Martinez has been affected by this. His manager has talked about it and talking to JD, basically telling him, and this isn't exactly what Ron Renicki said, but in so many words, get over it. Like everyone is dealing with the same thing. I'm sure Ron Renicki was a lot nicer than I was.
All right. If Ron Renicki is calling him out, then it's fair game. I'm sorry, Peter.
He didn't really call him out. He just answered a question. Yes, he's had conversations with JD. That's the polite managerial way in 2020.
Got it. Thanks for writing it, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl, to Todd, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.